because really at the end of the day, as much as I love what I do, my main goal is for my boys to see their mom as a strong, independent woman who can run a business.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Alison Carney. Alison is from Domino Bookkeeping, and there's a kind of a cult in bookkeeping or SMB that I've noticed, which is something called Profit First. In fact, you might be able to see it somewhere on the bookshelf behind me there. But let's say polarizing. Some people love it, some people hate it, but some businesses are really taking advantage of it, in particular Relay Bank. So Relay Bank has taken an interesting marketing slant here. They focus on profit first businesses. And today, Alison is going to talk to us about how she has used Relay to implement profit first strategy for her real estate customers. We're not sponsored by Relay, but by the way, Relay, please reach out. I'd love to hear from you. But I was interested in this particular cult, let's call it, cult of bookkeeping, if there is such a thing. And we're going to dive in and see whether this is something that could be appropriate for your business. Alison, you are very welcome to the show. Can you kick us off by telling us something about you that not many people know?
Hey, James, thank you so much for having me here. And I guess something that a lot of people don't know about me is I'm a big Lego fan. I love building Lego. My most recent build is the radio behind me. But yeah, I find it soothing and enjoyable. And I don't let my kids play with Lego on the floor, so I don't have to worry about stepping on the Legos.
I'm in favor of that. But now, you know what's weird? You're the second podcast interview I've had today who does Lego in their spare time. Do you think there's something about all, and he said that is in work, it's deadlines, all after deadlines and the stress, and it's like kind of high paced. And for him, the Lego is the antidote to that. It's quiet. You can pick it up and leave it and come back to it. And that's why he liked it. What do you like about it?
Yeah, I find it soothing. My six-year-old loves to build the sets as I do. But then he likes me to take it apart so he can rebuild it again. And I have found it just as soothing and enjoyable to take apart his Lego sets, because I will take them apart backwards so he can rebuild them based on the numbered bags and all of that with those. So it's just something soothing. It also, I'm a fidgeter. I'm always moving my fingers. So it's just keeps my hands busy too.
Yeah. Well, that Lego you showed me behind you is very satisfying. It's like a nice block. But a lot of my son's Legos are so complicated. They've got all these special pieces. And I want to get my hands on that. It looks so satisfying and solid. But all the modern Legos are like crazy pieces and angles and whatever. That's more like the Lego I had when I was a kid.
And this is actually, it's not brand new, but it's a set that's currently available. And there is a sound brick in it. So I can turn it on and it'll make like little radio sounds. And the back comes off so you can stick your cell phone in and you can play like your Spotify or music app. Listen to your favorite podcast, Gross Profit, through it.
Okay, now I'm going to be on the hunt. I think I'm going to start asking people, maybe there's a Lego cult out there for bookkeepers that I wasn't aware of. So let's, let me tuck that back into my list of questions. So you didn't start off wanting to be, someone asked me this morning, what did you want to be when you were a kid? And I said, oh, I was CEO of a purchase order management software solution. And they were like, you didn't even know what that meant. And I said, you're right, it was an astronaut, but hey, I'm projecting. So you didn't want to be an accountant even when you left school, as far as I know. You were doing something else. What were you doing?
Yes, I got my undergraduate in psychology. I minored in business and I worked in a residential treatment facility for teens with trauma and attachment disorders. So a lot of these kids spent the first few years of their life in an orphanage. In an orphanage, there's not enough adults around to give the babies and young children the attention and holding them that they need at that time. And so they are then adopted. And then as they hit those teenage years, they're going not only through teenage adjustments and puberty and all that, but they're also having all of these other things happening based on their early years.
And sometimes people frequently change careers into accounting or finance. And oftentimes there's like a takeaway that they have that brings something to what they do that other people wouldn't have. So is there something from that time that you learned that you still use every day in your finance role?
Yeah, accountants and bookkeepers are known to be inherent. They're not people. And so they don't like to talk to people. They don't like to communicate, or they're not great at it. And so I utilize my background in psychology. I think that helps benefit me because I'm able to communicate decently with people. And they're like, wait, you're an accountant? You're funny, or you're nice.
Yeah, I'm a programmer, but no one's ever told me I'm funny. So I guess maybe I'll work on that. Okay, so yeah, but listen, that makes total sense, because let's call it, as far as I can see, the numbers is only a fraction of the job. It's the communication and the skills around. I've seen CFOs and accountants, good ones, like more like diplomats in a way than programmers. I thought they were all programmers with just like a spreadsheet instead of a computer programming editor or whatever. But I was totally wrong. It's much more about the successful ones are the ones that are able to communicate with people and explain things and make people interested. God forbid, make them interested in what's happening in their own business. Yeah. Okay. You did an incredible job, by the way, like dealing with these kids. Was it hard when they left? Because they leave, right? They leave. It's not like you raise these kids and then you raise kids normally and hopefully they take your call still. But like these kids literally go off into a system. And I'm guessing sometimes into a system which is not necessarily, a future might not be bright for them. Am I wrong?
A little bit. So the kids that I worked with, they had been adopted and they had very loving adopted families. And those families had gotten to a point where they would take their child to therapy or whatever situation, and it just wasn't cutting it. They needed something more. And so then they came to this facility. They lived there 24/7, 365. My very first day, I graduated from college in December. I was on a weird schedule there. My very first day was Christmas morning. So because people have to be there, but it's incredibly difficult. You can't just leave your work at the office. My job description was to build relationships with these kids because that's what they struggled with. They didn't know they would push boundaries because they didn't wanted to see who actually loved them and cared about them. My job was to build these relationships. And then when they leave, there's a like kind of a no contact order for 2 years in place. Wow. And so that it's hard. It's so emotionally draining. It's so physically draining sometimes. And yeah, but I'm Facebook friends now with some of them. It's been over 10 years, I think.
Wow. Okay, awesome. So you minored when you did your psychology degree, but you did a minor in business administration with already some bookkeeping in there. So what made you transition away from it? Sounds like, I mean, the job you had wasn't a job, it was a vocation, right? That's a real vocation to do this work. So what made you decide to transition away from it?
I knew that it wasn't sustainable long term for me. I knew that just a psychology degree probably wasn't going to get me very far. So I decided that going back to school was my best option. Mm-hmm. So I went back for my MBA. And then during that time is where I really fell in love with my accounting courses. I wanted to be eligible to sit for the CPA exam. And because I did not get my undergraduate in accounting, I needed extra hours, like credit hours. So I got myself a master's in accounting as well.
Okay.
Lifelong learner.
Lifelong learner. Yeah, there's a lot of that. In finance, it's just one of those jobs, right? It seems to people get just endless degrees and accreditations, and there's continuous development and everything. Yeah. And there's a big industry in selling you those things, I guess. So, all right. So you did that. And then you did what was your first sort of accounting job in industry?
So while I was going to school for my MBA, my master's in accounting, I was working in insurance. So I jumped over to a premium audit position for an insurance company where I would audit the insurance premiums. Did they need to pay more money or not? But I was there probably less than a year before I got scooped up by a CPA firm. So I went and worked for them through a busy season. Felt like I was paying my dues, working all the crazy hours, January, February, March, April, all that. Hated it, didn't like it. So then I exited external audit and moved to internal audit. And I loved that.
Okay. So what's the difference? What's an external versus external is going to other businesses and giving out to them.
Yeah. External audit is doing it's a public accounting firm. They're going out. I think I had to go, it was like the end of the year, cold outside. And I had to go count inventory at this like lumber yard.
Right.
This is miserable.
Okay, so when you said external, I didn't mean literally external, and you're in a cold part of the world. Where are you? I didn't ask, actually.
I'm in the middle of the U.S. I am in St. Louis, Missouri. There's a lot of snow out my window. We get a big snow every 3 or so years.
Yeah. So insurance assessors, is that what you call them, it's in a hot topic at the moment.
This insurance company was different. They did excess insurance policies. So their insureds were like school districts and hospitals, and okay. They provided this excess. So we had to then audit that at the end of the year to see if they needed to get money back, if they met the premium they had paid, or if they owed us more money.
All right. So what was your first sort of freelance gig, or what was the first time you realized, hey, I can make a business out of this for myself?
I stayed in audit for about 5-6 years. There was a lot of travel involved, which I loved during my 20s. That was great. But when my husband and I were ready to start a family, I said, I don't want to be traveling anymore. I switched to corporate accounting. I worked for a pretty large US company. It's called Crate and Barrel. So I did their corporate accounting for a couple of years, and then I left the workforce to be with my kids. And it was during that time where I was like, maybe I don't want to be a full-time stay-at-home parent, and maybe all of this money I'm paying for my student loans can be better utilized, these degrees, and starting my own business.
Okay. So which came first, Domino or a client? Which was chicken and the egg?
Domino came first. So I had all the accounting background, which a lot of bookkeepers, they'll just start a bookkeeping business with no like background like that. But I wasn't being part of a team in a corporate accounting setting. You're given a piece of the puzzle, like just a piece of the what's happening. So I had to retrain myself to see the whole picture with small businesses when you handle the full bookkeeping cycle for someone instead of just a chunk of it. So I did a program specifically around bookkeeping for small businesses to just hone those skills. But yeah, so I got my first client within a month or two of starting my business. I didn't do a ton of advertising because my kids were so young still. But yeah, Domino came first.
You got something right, in my opinion, and it sounds easy, but I am terrible at it. You came up with Domino Bookkeeping, which I think is great. Got a great ring to it. So how did you come up with the name?
So my boys are named Dominic and Nolan. And so it was just a mashup of their names together, because really at the end of the day, as much as I love what I do, my main goal is for my boys to see their mom as a strong, independent woman who can run a business.
Okay. So that first client, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, or maybe you're in the belly to be somewhere, you're doing part of the accounts for an organization, you've been thinking, well, it'd be nice to step out on my own. How'd you go from 0 to 1? So you came up with the name. No one makes business cards anymore. I guess you made a website and came up with the name, but how did you attract that first client, and who was it?
So it was actually through I use QuickBooks online. So I'm a QuickBooks Pro Advisor, and you can actually go into QuickBooks Pro Advisor and search for Pro Advisors in your zip code. So she came from QuickBooks, and I had been bummed because the first month I hadn't gotten any contacts. I was trying to figure it out, and I got the email from Gail, my first client. I just met with her this week. She's still with me. While I was on vacation in the Bahamas, my first vacation since having kids. And of course I'm like, oh no, what do I do? Do I run back to the hotel room and email her? I was so excited, but I was also on vacation.
Yeah. That's what you do when you start. I would never became a client, but the first lead we had for Procurement Express was they were in Hawaii and I was in Ireland. So I was trying to get them on a call, and they keep saying, yeah, sure, I can meet you at 3 o'clock. And at 3 o'clock for them in the afternoon was like 4 o'clock in the morning for me. So they kept setting these appointments, and I'd be setting alarm clocks and getting up, and they never bloody showed up for the appointment. But anyway, never mind. I'm not bitter. It's fine. Thank you. We're an observatory, I remember. So yeah, go observatories in Hawaii. I hope things are going well for you. All right, great. You got your first client. So was this client in real estate off the bat, or did that come later?
Yeah, she had two businesses, still does. One is a real estate brokerage, and the other is a land acquisition company.
Okay. So when it comes to, give us a primer on like bookkeeping for real estate, what makes it different to other types of bookkeeping you might be doing?
Yeah, there in real estate, there's a lot of nuance. It depends. So for Gail, she has a brokerage. So that means that she sells a house, she gets the commissions from that, and then she has to pay out a percentage to the agent. And then part of the agent, you need to make sure that the agent owes fees back to the brokerage. So that comes out and then they get paid their check. We need to make sure we record the gross amount that they earn for like their year-end earnings totals. So you can't just categorize, oh, this check that goes to this agent is this amount and that's how much it is. You have to put the gross in there, subtract out their expenses and make it work that way. Outside of that, when you have real estate investors, which is a lot of my education in bookkeeping has been around that, there's different ways to do the bookkeeping for a investor who likes to flip properties versus buying them and holding them, renting them out, whether like a long-term rental or a short-term rental. The accounting is different for that.
Okay, so you mentioned that, and let me try and understand this. So when you're flipping, you keep the expenses on the income statement, whereas an investment, you put it onto the balance sheet. Tell me, why does that happen and what's the thinking behind it? What does the impact, is there a tax advantage or is it just for completeness sake? What's the difference? Why should they be different?
So a lot of flips, you don't own them for a long period of time. So if they're bought and sold in the same fiscal year, they will just stay on the income statement or your profit and loss statement the whole time. Mm-hmm. It really helps the business owner be able to visually see everything that's happening in real time on that statement versus if you're on the balance sheet, that's more of like this is the history of your business. This is everything that's been going on. Now, if you buy a flip property in November or December and it's not sold by 12/31, we will do a journal entry, a reversing one, to move it over to the balance sheet for year end. So we take it off of your income statement for that year. And then we put it on January 1st, we put it right back on. Whereas if you have a buy and hold property, if it's under construction still, we want to hold those costs separately. But once it goes in service, we'll handle everything differently. Any holding costs, so if you're paying property maintenance fees or they're mowing the lawn, these would typically be expenses that would go on your income statement. If you're under construction, they're all going to go on your balance sheet and be rolled up into the cost basis of your property when you finish the rehab and that property goes in service. So your CPAs and tax accountants are always asking the bookkeeper or the real estate investor for what date did this property go in service, because it plays a part in determining cost basis and how to expense those rehab costs, also holding costs.
Okay. So what I'm hearing there is, so from a management accounts perspective, I'm flipping properties. I think of the property more like any other good I'm buying and selling. So I'm just, it's a cost. It's a cost of goods sold, really, if you look at it that way. Mm-hmm. And then I know, okay, I bought it for this much. I got to sell it for this much. And then you see the gross margin right there, which is important. And then but then if it goes longer than that, you put it on the balance sheet because it's not really, you're not realized the value. I guess it comes down to when you realize the value, right? So
yeah, if you haven't sold it in a long time, that's just like a year-end thing. If you are still planning on flipping it, if it's just like a flip in progress, it's a timing situation. We just move it off for one day, get it off the books for 12/31, put it back on 1/1 and continue moving along. Now, we will buy properties intending to flip it or vice versa, buy a property intending to hold it, and you can change your mind at any point. You're flipping this house and you're like, I could rent this out for some good money, or you're flipping a house and you're like, I don't want to keep this. I want to sell it, which having good accounting can help you determine that, because a lot of times you don't realize how much money you might be sinking into a property. So having all of that organized is beneficial, but having that there can help you make those decisions.
Okay. So we're going to chat about Profit First and specifically how you use Relay Bank. So let's start with a primer on Profit First. How would you explain it to someone who asks you for the first time?
So profit first is exactly what it sounds like. It is taking the profit from your revenue before you take anything else from it. You think typically business owners, they have money come into their bank and then they're like, okay, now I'm going to run payroll. I'm going to pay all of these bills. I'm going to do all of these expenses. I'm going to, hopefully they're going to say, I'm going to save for taxes and I'm going to save for this, but not always. So the whole point of profit first is at any point, whether you're just starting your business or you've been in business for decades, you can implement it based on your needs. And it's just setting aside, basically it's allocating every revenue that comes in and making sure that you are setting aside money for yourself and your business. That's going to help you with burnout. That's going to help you save money and run a healthier business overall.
So the way, is it wrong to say that it's treating your profit like an expense, like a hard expense that has to be paid, and you treat it like anything else that has to be paid, and you basically treat it. A lot of people just run their business and see what's left at the end, but it's been more intentional about what you're taking.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. Because then if you see, oh, well, I only have this amount in my operating expense allocation, so maybe I need to look at cutting some costs, like maybe your expenses are out of control.
Okay. All right. So you were practicing the pronunciation. So the author, which is
Mike Michalowicz.
Well done. Okay. Mike Michalowicz. Yeah, I'll let you say that first. So he managed to get a whole book out of that. I presume there's a bit more to it, but I think a lot of people get their hands on that book, or they just read the cover and they go, oh yeah, I got it. I know what that means. I'm going to go and basically take all the money out of my business, buy a yacht. But then there's the other part of it. So maybe we'll get into Relay a little bit. Now, Relay, is it just a bank? It's an online bank. It's an online bank. Like, it's a real bank, though. It's not a...
There's a brick and mortar. I think it's called Thread, and it has a physical location in Tennessee, but it is otherwise an online bank, which is a newer. There's been several other banks that I've seen. Yep. They're becoming more popular.
Yeah, my wife uses Mercury, even though we're not based in the US, and there's a load of them now. There's Brex, obviously, which is more like coming from the expense side. And they all seem to have, it's not a bank, which used to be just a bank, whatever, but now it's like they have their marketing advantage, if you like. So I can't remember what Mercury's is, but I think Brex, I know they give you a lot of tools. So they give you a lot of expense management and cards and things like that. So what's Relay's marketing angle here?
They are a profit first bank, because when you think about profit first, the first thing that comes to mind is the number of bank accounts that you need. So I spoke about needing to allocate those expenses. In order to allocate, you need to have a number of bank accounts. And so if you think about traditional bank, they will charge you fees every month, account maintenance fees or fees for this and that and the next thing, just to maintain your account. So when you have 4, 5, 6 plus accounts, which is the base number of accounts in Profit First is 5. But in Profit First for real estate investors, you should really have a bank account per property. So those bank, that's a lot of bank accounts. In Relay, those bank accounts are free. You can get up to 20 bank accounts for free. 2 of them can be savings accounts that will earn you, as of today, 1% off the bat. And if you have a lot of money, then they'll up the percentage. I don't know what that percentage is because I don't have a lot of money.
Okay. So this is where the profit first part comes in. They give you a lot of accounts. Now, let me ask a question here. So I was assuming, because they gave you a load of accounts, and profit first is, in my mind, is like the envelope system for saving, for you put money in different things. But like that, isn't that kind of a bit unsophisticated, for the want of a better expression? Like bookkeepers are used to, they already have accounts in QuickBooks. So what does it matter where they are physically? As long as your bookkeeping is right, why do you need these physical different accounts somehow?
Let's say your business has one checking account and that's it. All of your money comes in there. All of your expenses come out. It's really hard, unless you are tracking your cash flow like a hawk, it's really hard to know what of the money in that checking account is earmarked for other things. So if you have the income come in to an income only account and then disperse it across your profit account, your tax savings account, your operating expense account, it's a lot easier to then see what you have available.
Okay. So I get it 100%. So I open my phone, I just see, okay, there's so much in tax, that looks right. And there's so much in my profit, which is motivating, and you can get a better idea. So where does, let's say your expenses that you're accruing for, or is this just for cash-based businesses? Or let's say you have those, you know, in hand, what do you call those expenses that you know exist, but you haven't paid yet?
Accruals? Yeah. Like your once a year, like you pay your insurance once a year type thing?
Insurance, yeah, good example, yeah. How do you work with that in this system? Do you go back to using your accounts then, look at your income statement, or?
So the idea behind it, and Profit First is very flexible. I've talked to Profit First clients who come to me and they think, they read in the book, they're like, oh, the book says that you should do this percentage in your profit account and this percentage here. And they give you all these percent, but really it's moldable to what works best for you. So you have to really just take a look at what you can afford. So it's not, I guess the answer to that question is that we want to not have to worry about planning for your insurance payment that happens once a year. You want to know that what you have in your operating expense account is the money you have to spend, and you should adjust your expenses outside of that. So let's, for an example, you have someone who's been a real estate investor for decades, and they have just, they're run down, they're burnt out, they're not making any money, they don't understand where all their money is going. You take that and you implement Profit First. You can start with 97% of your revenue coming in goes to your operating account. And then you're only putting 1% into profit, 1% into tax savings, and 1% into owner's compensation. Okay. So you can start there if you know your expenses are high. And then you do have to go through your books with your bookkeeper and really see, okay, what of this expenses, is there anything we can remove? Is there anything we can do cheaper? Then you can start adjusting those percentages. Now you only put 80% in operating expenses and a higher percentage in your other account.
Okay, I got it. So it's the inverse, really. If only you, because let's face it, the fingers in the cookie jar is the problem here. So if you just say, give them a smaller cookie jar, the rest of the money will be there when you need it because you've done some sort of plan. And that makes a lot of sense. So when it comes, I'm looking at Relay here on their website, and they obviously target bookkeepers and accountants because it's right there on the top. And they offer, if you're an accountant, you can do accounts payable sort of software. They seem to be offering sort of tools and software to help bookkeepers take those things off their plate. And do you use any of those things that, you know, are outside of QuickBooks or whatever? Is there anything that helps you in your business apart from the accounts? Is there any? My friend of mine, Rich, my business partner, he used to sell this software, which is Virus software, who's an IT guy, but he used to sell it because it was easy for him to install. He just pressed a button and whatever, it all happened. It was good software, but like still made his life easier. So he's selling it. Is there anything that they're offering you to make it entice you to use them versus some other bank?
Yeah, so I am a Relay partner, but some of the best things for bookkeepers and accountants with Relay is there's a lot of, we have to, every time we onboard a new client, we have to get read-only accountant access to their bank accounts so we can log in securely and safely, pull bank statements. Some banks don't offer view only. We don't want to use our clients' logins because, again, I have a background in audit. Segregation of duties is huge. I don't want the liability of if money goes missing that, and because I have a login that can transact, I don't want to be liable for that. So that's just not something that is ideal in our industry. And one thing that's really cool about Relay is my personal login to look at my Relay accounts. I can then see all of my clients. I can go in immediately and they can adjust their access. They can give me full rights. They can give me read only. And it is very well run that way. So I never have to chase down logins or how to get in. The accounts are all free. And I do utilize the bill pay function. The only time you pay a fee to Relay is if you want Relay Pro, and it's $30 a month. And that is for, so you can send same day ACHs. You can pay all of your vendors that way. It's great. You can request their payment details and have them drop in their W-9. So you don't have to go chasing them around for W-9s like I am currently for all of my non-Relay clients.
Nice job, Relay. Okay, you know what? That's the dirty little secret of software companies is they, I know this is true for SAP and it's actually true for us too, which is that I have all these fancy features like OCR this and whatever, cash flow forecasting and recurring budgets and whatever, I mean, all these features, right? But the thing that people really pay for is being able to switch between accounts.
I did forget there another one of my favorite features is a lot of times you connect your bank accounts in QuickBooks and the bank feed will automatically pull the bank, like the memo detail that like you, if you print off your bank statement, like the detail, sometimes you're like, what even is this? You can't tell. And if you're moving money around in Relay, they require you to say what it's for and you type it in. So if my client is depositing a check, they're required to say what that check is for, and they can't just tie it. Won't just say mobile deposit with no information. So it's nice. It also shortens the time we spend closing the books at the end of the month. It provides less questions we have to reach out and ask because the detail's already there.
Very good. Nice job, Relay. And clearly is SMB focused. You can see that in their messaging and there they have 100K profit globe. So SMB focused for smaller businesses. Awesome. Very good. Very interesting. So maybe I'm a nerd, so I love talking about all the software and all the tools and the stuff like that. And it seems like a really good solution. All right. So maybe you could just tell me a bit about who's your ideal client now? Is it still retail? Is it a certain geography? Who should reach out to you and how can they do it?
My ideal client is, so I'm in the US. I can work virtually. So it was funny when you were telling that story about Hawaii. I have one client in Hawaii and I just had a call with someone else in Honolulu yesterday. We're only 4 hours ahead at this point, so it wasn't too bad. But anywhere in the US, I can work with you. I do have a lot of local clients, but all the stuff we do is not necessary to be in person. And I really love working in the real estate industry because there's so much nuance. Your mom and pop corner shop bookkeeper may not know how to handle that. So I really enjoy working in the real estate sector.
Okay. All right. Nice target. So now I don't know which way this question is going to go. So I'm very excited as sure as the guests or listener are, right? Listener, singular, maybe. Let's see who's here, still here. All right. Who is your business hero and why? Come on. Give me the right one. Give me the right one.
Okay. My whole value and mission in my business is how hard you don't realize it till you do it. My business is my third child. I have two young kids and I have my business. And so just going through this myself and then looking back and seeing those strong mothers who are also killing it in their careers is that for me. And I'm lucky enough to be able to be surrounded by some of those people. My sister-in-law is, you're very excited. You want me to talk about her. My sister-in-law has been very successful in her career, I think she's even going back to school for yet another degree. She has her JD, she has her bachelor's. I think now she's getting an executive MBA. She's the president of the trust arm of a massive company here in the US. And so I look up to her and we share a name. So I can also piggyback. If someone Googles me, they might find her. If they Google her, they might find me.
Very good. She's the one with one L and you've got two. Is that right?
No, I've got one and we have the same. It's literally the exact same spelling. Middle initial is the same. Allison M. Carney.
Wow. Okay. All right. Cool. I love that. I just love it when people say their hero is someone they know, because that's great. A, I'm very selfish. I'm almost guaranteed an extra listener. That's the way I'm building my listener base here. One person at a time. But I also love this personal side of it. So thanks very much, Allison. I've really enjoyed chatting with you today. And thank you, valued listener, for listening also and coming this far on this journey with us. Your special reward is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/partners. And on there, I have done a webinar on how I believe a fractional CFO can best explain their value to a CEO. So CEOs and CFOs are chalk and cheese in some direction, in some ways. They're different mindsets. And let's face it, CEOs are often crazy, scatterbrained, all over the place. They don't speak the same language. Now, you know how to talk to them, but unfortunately, fractional CFOs don't always do an amazing job of explaining their own value. Great at telling you how good everyone else is. And I have my take on how you can do that in a way that will light up a CEO. Go to procurementexpress.com/partners. Have a listen. Let me know what you think. I could be totally wrong, and you're free to tell me that, but I have a lot of passion about this. I think hiring the right bookkeeper or fractional CFO is the most transformational hire you can make in a successful business, and people just don't know it. They're literally on a path to working until they're 70, and all they have to do is hire the right finance partner, and they could literally retire tomorrow if they wanted to, Like, that's the difference a great finance professional can make in your business, but no one's telling you. They don't know. That's it. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much, Allison. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Oh, and I failed to tell you where you can find me. I am at Domino Bookkeeping, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, all the things. You can also email me at hello@dominobookkeeping.com.
Great. We'll link you up in the show notes. There you go.
Thank you so much.